Have you ever thought about how incredibly complex our spit is? It may only be 99% water, but your saliva isn't simple. That remaining 1% holds incredibly meaningful information that could change everything. And I'm not just talking about your family tree. Hi, I'm Baratunde Thurston, and on this season of Spit, an iHeartRadio podcast with 23andMe, we explore how DNA isn't just about ancestry. It can also be key to understanding your health. Yo, it's Baratunde. Welcome back. Samantha McVeigh and Annie Reese are no strangers to tackling the tough questions. Their show, Stuff Mom Never Told You, is a wildly successful go-to for conversations on what it is to identify as female. And with research-based discussions around feminism and how it impacts everyday life, it's no wonder they have an audience the size of a small country. So for this episode, I was especially interested in how they would tackle the question of health and DNA, and how our genetic makeup not only holds the keys to our past, but can reveal certain health insights that may impact our future. As an adoptee, especially a transracial adoptee, Samantha shares how it's not unusual to seek out more information about one's biological family, but to date, information about her health history has remained a mystery. She's taken the 23andMe health test, and she's both excited and anxious, all while recognizing the need for a strong support system, as this can be an emotionally triggering experience for many. Samantha's approach to preparing herself for the test is extremely important, especially given her personal history. As she herself acknowledges, it's also very empowering to have control over your own information, with the choice to learn as much or as little as you'd like. That's the benefit of this experience. It's about you. It's up to you. Your DNA may be unbelievably small, but it's incredibly powerful. Samantha shares how mildly surprised she is by what she learns, but more importantly, how the experience has been giving her a lot to think about. Let's listen as Samantha shares her journey of discovery and how by learning more, she feels like she's winning. Check it out.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And this episode is going to be a little different. Just so you know, this episode is sponsored by 23andMe. And as always, when it comes to companies and programs like these, make sure you're reading the fine print, know your options and your rights, and keep informed.
Yes. Definitely.
I think that's a good take on all the things as I'm signing many papers right now for many other things. But yes, know your rights and things do change. So understand your rights, keep informed and updated on all of it.
Yes.
That's the first warning. We also have a content warning, mentions of childhood trauma and overall discussions of health and wellness. It's we're not going to go too deep into them, but yes, I'm getting really personal, y'all.
Mm-hmm. She is.
So thank you, Annie, for giving me the space.
Oh, no. Thanks for being open with us.
All right. Here we go. Yeah. So it is a fairly special and fairly personal episode. Again, this is what we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable. You feel comfortable in sharing these things with our peoples?
Yes. Perhaps too comfortable sometimes.
That's true. We just let it all out.
We do.
And y'all are still so patient with us. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But we are taking a moment to look into our own health traits and DNA, specifically mine. But again, before we talk about some of the information, let's talk about how we got ready for this episode. And I say we because Annie was absolutely pivotal to me going, should I do this? Do you think I'm mentally healthy enough to do this? And will you support me?
Yes, yes. I hope you know, listeners, Samantha and I are legit friends. And we do look out for each other. And we do take that seriously. Because we know that, you know, you can really do yourself some harm in this kind of medium when you're being so open and you're digging up these things. And our very first thing that we started out doing was this mini series on trauma.
Right.
And we had in like our check-ins and making sure like both of us are okay and that we're not doing ourselves harm by being open with this. So this, it was very important to me because I knew you were interested in it. And I know you'll talk about why. in a minute, but it was very important to me to be like, okay, if you're going to do this, what is our game plan?
Right.
What are we going to do to make sure that this is going to be a healthy, non-traumatizing experience for you?
And yeah, as in fact, when I would take the test and send it off, we would do a check-in with each other. When I got the results, we did a check-in. And then you checked in again with me about a day later, like, how are you? I don't even know if it was a day later, like a few hours later. And how are you? And I think that's really important for us to talk about because many of you already know when it comes to my identity, I have a lot of trauma surrounding it. As in fact, that was part of my therapy session I had when we did our trauma mini-series when I started on this podcast. And it's not unusual for adoptees, especially transracial adoptees, to seek out more information of their biological family. And there's a lot of abandonment and attachment issues that come along with it. And with the advancements of these types of results in companies, people are able to dig a little bit for information when it comes to their ancestry, their family, and possible health traits. We've talked about personal experiences previously when we talked with author Nicole Chung about her memoir, All We Can Ever Know. And for myself, a part of that journey has to include protecting my mental and emotional health. And we all know therapy is something we talk about a lot on here. And also to go ahead and put this caveat, therapy is a privilege, but it is important to seek it out if you can. And also finding a good therapist and finding a therapist that you specializes in what you need.
Mm-hmm. Very, very important.
Very important. And I will tell you, I did choose a therapist. If you all remember, when we did our trauma mini-series, that was one of the big things that we started out with as well, that both Annie and I would have therapeutic sessions so that we could discuss the really heavy topics that we were talking about at that point in time. And Annie, I think you're still talking to that therapist, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, we loved her. And I stepped back a little bit because I got too busy, didn't have enough money, all those things. So I came back and researched a new therapist whom I found through the world of interwebs, who is actually a transracial adoptee herself. So I'm very glad to hear this. And she specializes in childhood trauma, is a woman of color. I believe she's Korean as well. So all of these check marks that I found, we had a beginning session and we had a phone conversation and everything is fit and aligned. And it was really nice and different to have a moment to be able to talk about my identity issues and her to fully understand and to kind of call it out. Because a lot of the times I've had many therapists who would be like, oh man, that's hard. How did you react to that? Trying to figure out how to respond to me. And because she kind of understood, she knew how to. So it was really interesting and refreshing. And it's a whole new turn for me because I've not had an Asian woman being my therapist. I've had a Black woman, and then I've had a lot of white women who are my therapists. And so this is definitely a different experience. And I'm interested to see how far we can go. But yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of unpacking and trauma work. But I did also let her know at the very beginning, hey, I'm doing a thing with DNA reports, and I know this could be triggering for me because there's a lot of what ifs. Mm-hmm. In my head that I've been able to kind of ignore, but with these, it gives me a way to research deeper. So we talked about that and why we're doing this. Yeah, I'm very curious, and I was very curious, but also with that, I knew that I had trauma and triggers, and I needed to recognize those as well. And the reason we wanted to talk about this, Annie, you were the one who came and I think sent me an article talking about how it can be traumatizing to discover new information.
Yes.
So that can come from this types of reports. And I was very grateful. I was like, oh, dang. Yeah, that's true. And so we wanted to talk about and highlight that it is important to put yourself in a good place so that it doesn't break you down.
Right. And we're, you know, as we've been saying, we're very big proponents of that because I think for a lot of people, they might not consider that aspect of getting a DNA report. And it's not like more information is good, but just being prepared that there could be things that you find out or that possibilities that you're made aware of that maybe you weren't prepared for. And maybe it would be something that's triggering for you you. So just like making sure, yes, you're in that good place, or you've got a plan in place, you got a friend to support you and have your back. Because, you know, we're all about supporting women and being there for each other. And we also are just very aware of like potential triggers and traumas on the show. I feel like we talk about it quite often.
Right. And it's so important because we've experienced it. And sometimes having a name for what you're going through without realizing it is nice to be like, oh, again, because I do recognize my triggers, I'm able to prepare. So big events and discoveries can undo some things for me. And therefore, being able to recognize like the physical tells is really important to prepare. And I say prepare in big ways. But yeah, information like this can give you a chance to take control of a few things, whether you're made aware of things, how you proceed with things, just overall life things, I guess, for me specifically. And we're going to talk a little more about it in a second, but I made some headway in discovering a little history about my past, including getting in contact with possible family members, distant relatives possibly. So a lot of things. And that could be traumatizing, especially for me.
Yes.
As we know. But yeah, so that's a way that I did want to prepare and would tell people who are doing these types of reports to be aware of your triggers. And be having a plan in place, whether it's to go to a supportive friend, taking breaks, taking naps, because I love naps. Stuff like that is really important.
Now let's take a moment and listen to a story of how understanding your health begins with understanding what your genetics say about you.
For Derek, 23andMe helped him connect with his brothers, an experience that changed his life.
There were so many questions to ask, so many dots to connect. There were seven other brothers and sisters in the house in which I was raised, and I was the only person in the family that wore glasses, so I was always, okay, well, that's a thing. Well, all of my paternal folks wear glasses, and I went, oh, okay, so now I've got folks that actually look like me and look like me in the way that that I identify myself. I was a college baseball player, come from a family of baseball players. It's eye-opening to me that the thing that I love so much, I shared with this group of people that I didn't know.
Through 23andMe, Derek discovered important insights about his family health history.
They were lactose intolerant. I'd always carried that. And in my house, my mother always had milk, and I was never team milk. And to find out that from my father's side, yeah, they were all lactose intolerant, and there it was right in front of me. From a health standpoint, we communicate back and forth over some of the small things, sleep issues and such. But the shared information, shared IQ always makes us smarter. The Garner family has made me smarter about how I live my life.
The connections Derek made through 23andMe changed his outlook on life.
A lot of it is just clarity. There's one thing to think that you are a certain thing and have some basic understanding of that thing. But then to find out and know who you are and where these things come from, and that they're passed along, and that they're identical in spaces. The mental stress and wear and tear that's removed from my life, it's exponential.
This story was brought to you by 23andMe. Learn more about your ancestry and get personalized genetic insights into your health. Get started today at 23andme.com.
Y'all, I did get my report, and going through it, it kind of made me laugh. Again, like I said, I've been interested to learn about my background, about digging into what can be emotionally taxing. But, you know, I wanted to find out a little more, get some healthy information, and get a kind of a start of some of the things that I had no clue. So I have no access to. Mm-hmm. You all know I am a Korean adoptee, came into the U.S. when I was 7, lived in an orphanage for 2 to 3 years. Don't have a lot of information other than the information that was brought with me and given to my parents. I can't even remember the orphanage I was in. I'm sure my parents have that information. I was adopted through Holt International, and Holt International is the biggest adoption agency within Korea. As in fact, a majority of people probably were adopted through Holt International. And just for a little history on who Holt International Services were, it was created by Bertha and Harry Holt, who actually adopted eight what they call war orphans themselves. So during this time, there were a lot of children out in the streets, as historically said, because they were biracial, usually white soldiers with Korean women. And that brought a lot of shame. There was a lot of factors to this. And so you saw a lot of orphaned young kids, young children. And they adopted eight. And from that, it kind of just grew into a large service that grew internationally. A huge amount of adoptees went to Norway, Denmark, Belgium, the Netherlands, France, Switzerland, and Germany, and eventually into the U.S. We know a lot of Western Christianity and religion kind of popped into play as well. And it was during this time, up until, I would say, the 1990s, that international adoption like that, transracial adoption like that, was huge. And from what I gather, was a pretty big money market for South Korea. Of course, there's a lot of backlash. So there's a little bigger conversation about that and the trauma that it has caused. There's also this idea that a majority of the adoptees were young girls or baby girls, because the lineage and the patriarch essentially kind of trumped matriarchal lines. And it apparently can't be as traced when it comes to legacies and inheritances and such. So hold all these things. Apparently there was this whole print in what was called the Pound Pup Legacy that was written in The Progressive, which was an article, I think, based in South Korea, talking about a lot of the effects and everything that happened, even talking about there was a steady supply of healthy children being shipped to these different countries. There's also the same conversation. And we've talked about it before when we talked about surrogacy, where women were told that they were just going to be cared for at these orphanages and then kind of tricked into signing over rights. So there's a lot of conversation. I know we heard that with Nicole Chung. She had a little conversation about how not everyone was informed on what happened, and that right. happened a lot in these kind of agencies. They're trying to do a lot more transparency when it comes to adoptions, but still a lot of questions and a lot of things that had happened in the past where people can't reconnect. I will say, I believe Holt International had a service for adopted kids who grow up and want to find out about their families and having them travel back to South Korea. I have a distinct memory when I was in the orphanage of an older woman, a young woman, coming back with her adoptive parents to visit the orphanage and kind of looking back on her history. So that was interesting. I have very little memories. I remember her showing up and everybody being very excited about that. Within that culture also was a really kind of sad, which that I kind of believed is that whole, like, these girls, if they weren't adopted, they would go into prostitution. That was the immediate reaction. And so we were being saved from a world of prostitution. And not that that couldn't happen, but it was such a cautionary tale that was told to white Americans to save children that it became a whole persona. And for me, I grew up hearing that, like, man, be grateful. Because you could have lasted this way. And don't get me wrong, in that orphanage, I remember a lot of young girls who were aging out. Kind of a lot like the foster system here in the U.S. They were just aging out and no one was helping them. The government wasn't helping them. The people were not connecting people with them. Of course, it could be also that, you know, these young kids have been traumatized in the system and just want to be out. And so they try to rush out. So it was very interesting to look at that history. But with that type of history, that also means things get lost in translation. So we would lose a lot of records. I was told that I did have chickenpox vaccine, that I actually did have measles at one point in time, and that was about it. And then I was told that my parents were divorced, and I was not allowed to live with my stepfather. So they gave me to my grandmother, because my stepfather, my real biological father, was not able to care for me. And then after that, she took me to the orphanage because she couldn't care for me either. So those are the things that I remember distinctly as being told my history. But outside of that, I don't have anything. I don't know. I have a picture of what I thought was my brother. But again, I have in and out dreams that are not necessarily true. All these things that came with me. So having this kind of breakdown was interesting. So let me talk about that, because now that I've given you the sad history of adoption and my life, I know everybody wants to hear about that. So according to my 23andMe ancestry composition report, I am 100% that Korean, or at least very highly likely. And according to the rundown of the report, it really says 100% Korean. So I don't know if you've been able to look at these reports or view these reports. It has kind of a color wheel, and it tells you kind of the breakdown of ancestry or DNA breakdown. Of course, it changes apparently with more and more people get reports or take on the 23andMe and actually send in their kit. So the overall breakdown was interesting and made me take a deeper look at my own history. So the way it breaks down, it shows me the different administrative regions. So it says, quote, South Korea has 16 administrative regions, and we found the strongest evidence of your ancestry in the following 9 regions. So the top 5 is, 1 is Seoul, 2nd is Jeollabuk-do, 3 is Jeollanam-do, and then 4 is Busan, and then 5 is Chungcheongbuk-do. So it's really interesting. I did like reading these, and now I want to go and research it more because those regions are not so. Of course, I know Seoul. I also know Busan. I was told Seongnam City, and I think that's in the region of Seoul. So I'm interested in seeing that to be able to see those regions as well. And like I said, I did try to contact someone who's like 5th removed cousin because I found out they were adopted as well. And they live in the States. So there's a chunk of people that live in the States. And several of the people that I went through that had connections or it shows as possible relatives for me that has that list, several of them were adopted. So that says a lot to me. And I didn't understand the history behind that. And I want to learn more because I'm like, wow, this seems to be so common. I wonder why. And so there's a whole breakdown. Of course, I also did my cyber stalking and went through like Facebook, trying to find them, Instagram, LinkedIn was a big one. but I just reached out to the one person because it turned out she and I had been adopted the same year. And I really kind of wanted to see if we could connect. Haven't made it beyond that, other than we shared each other, like as in like we confirmed and I guess you can friend them. Is the best way I can think of it, as like in Facebook, you can friend them. And so, I don't know, we'll see, but it's there and there's an option there. And it was nice to know that I had an option with that. So listeners, if I go beyond, I'll let you know.
Keep us updated.
So moving on, we want to talk about the health and traits reports. And I didn't know what exactly to expect since my background and my ancestry is a big mystery for me. But looking through the reports, I was mildly surprised. And just for reference, in the reports, the way it's phrased when you see it, it is, quote, variants not detected, typical likelihood, slightly increased risk, and increased likelihood. So that's kind of how they report it. So in my report, type 2 diabetes was at an increased likelihood with it being at a 42% range. So it gives you kind of a range of compared to others, how likely. And also states with it that overall it can depend on different factors, which is always important to remember because for me, I get my yearly physical exam with the blood works. Of course, that helps our insurance stuff. And I know that I'm in a good place right now, but we'll definitely have to keep a close watch on it because things change and your age and that all factors in as well.
Yes. And it's also worth noting that, according to the CDC, for women, quote, diabetes increases the risk of heart disease, the most common diabetes complication, by about 4 times in women, but only about 2 times in men. And women are also at a higher risk of other diabetes-related complications, such as blindness, kidney disease, and depression.
Right. I didn't actually know the statistics until after I started my research. I was like, okay, let's see what this is about. I want to dig deeper and just being able to get and attain this information is good. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't know that women were at higher risk. I feel like there's other factors that we didn't talk about in that, but, you know, we'll get to that later. And again, it also says in the CDC report that it's, quote, different among women, African-American, Hispanic, Latina, American Indian, Alaska Native, and Asian Pacific Islander women are more likely to have diabetes than white women, which, of course, being an Asian woman, that's good for me to know.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Also in that increased likelihood category was coronary artery disease, which Mindy has talked about before as it can present differently in women than men. But also something to remember, according to the CDC, quote, heart disease is sometimes thought of as a man's disease. Almost as many women as men die each year of heart disease in the United States. And not knowing my history, that is something that I definitely want to keep in check. And I'm glad to know of this. Because at right now, again, everything was great with my blood work this year, but things change swiftly. Mm-hmm. Things change in when it comes to health-wise. So I want to know these things. And so being able to be informed of that feels like I'm winning.
Ha-ha! Yeah.
Isn't that how we do this? Mm-hmm. And for many, the BRCA1 or the breast cancer gene and BRCA2 can be alarming. As it stays on the 23andMe reports, specific genetic variants in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes are associated with increased risks of developing certain cancers, including breast cancer in women and men, and ovarian cancer. And also, they do have a great disclaimer about this, and I do want to read it off. The 23andMe BRCA1 and BRCA2 genetic health risk report is intended for use in adults to report three genetic variants in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes associated with a higher risk of developing breast, ovarian, and prostate cancer. Report does not include variants in other genes linked to hereditary cancers. Not intended to diagnose any disease or tell you about your overall risk of developing a disease. Not intended to be used to determine any treatments, and results should be confirmed in clinical settings before taking any medical action, and is not a substitute for visits to healthcare professionals for recommended screenings or appropriate follow-up, which I think is really, really crucial to know. Again, this is not a tool for you to just bank your decisions on, but just a way for you to be like, let me go check this out and get more information. I think it's smart for any and all of these traits being reported, even though it's a likelihood that, yes, I still will go and check it out with a doctor. Mm-hmm. Just as a reminder.
Yes.
And for me, myself, the report showed zero variants detected. But again, a good reminder from the report, however, more than 1,000 variants in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes are known to increase cancer risk, so you could still have a variant not included in this test. In addition, most cases of breast and ovarian cancers are not caused by inherited variants, so women without a variant are still at risk of developing these cancers. It's important to continue with any cancer screenings your healthcare provider recommends. And yes, I will absolutely be going to my screenings when it's time to squish the boobies. That's how I see it.
As they say, the technical term, I'm pretty sure. Yes. And as you said, I think, you know, being informed and getting that more information and being clear on what that information means is so key. My family does have a history of breast cancer. So the women in our family especially are always like, make sure you get tested, make sure you do this, and make sure you check for this, and kind of having that in the back of my mind that it is something that I need to keep an eye on. And I think that is incredibly important.
Right. As we all should. So these were some of the health things that we did want to talk about and that came up when I did get my report. But there's some other interesting things of note from this report. The wellness report indicates that I am likely to flush as an alcohol flush reaction. So this is not news to me.
Yeah.
As I discovered this when I first started drinking, and I was like, whoa, what is happening? And I had to research about what was happening. And I was like, this is really mean of my genetics to tell on me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, this one's okay. And then the next one was a muscle composition. So it's common in elite power athletes. I really wish someone would let my muscles know that this is supposedly something that is a trait. And the report states, quote, studies have found that almost all elite power athletes, including sprinters, throwers, and jumpers, have a specific genetic variant in a gene related to muscle composition. You have the same genetic variant as these athletes. That is not an obvious to me, and I'm very sad that I can't say that's an obvious to me. I really wish it were, but I was like, I'm just going to gloat about it anyway, even though it's not
She sure did.
Physically seen here. Mm-hmm. And according to the traits report, I am, quote, more likely to be able to match a musical pitch, more likely than average to have had a bunion, more likely than average to be afraid of heights. It is very true. Likely bitten by mosquitoes more often than others. This explains a lot between you and I, Annie. And likely to wake up around 7:44 a.m. I have not put that to the test, but I kind of want to check and see if I feel better for some reason. But, you know, whatever. I thought those were all very interesting. They're very specific.
Yeah.
And I want to know more. And they all made me laugh a little bit and giggle a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought it makes me feel superior to have said, I may have had a bunion before you.
Ew. That makes you feel more superior. Oh, no. You know what? Good for you.
So there you go. This has given me a lot to think about and has been really interesting to read and has led me to do some more research for the sake of my health and my ancestry. And I'm glad to have had this information on hand. And yeah, yeah, I keep digging. And as in fact, I got a new alert from 23andMe saying that, hey, here's another trait you might not know about. So it keeps updating, I believe, as it continues with other kits being sent in. So I'll keep you informed of anything new.
Yes, please do. And thank you for sharing this with us,
thank
Samantha.
Thank you for letting me.
Oh, so much love. So much love on this show. Well, listeners, if you have any thoughts about what we talked about today, you can always email us. You know we love to hear from you. Our email is stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram @StuffMomNeverToldYou. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina.
Thank you, Christina.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And that's it on another dope show. Did this episode inspire you to take a closer look at your health history, your genetic makeup? Who knew DNA could reveal so much about our past while also holding the keys to certain health insights that may impact our future? I continue to be inspired by these stories, and I hope you do as well. Catch you next time. Listen to Spit, an original podcast from iHeartRadio and 23andMe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.